Good afternoon. Come to part two of our lesson today. And I'm going to try, as I tell the story of Baal Peor, not to do the things that I said not to this morning. So we don't want to moralize the story. I don't want to generalize or allegorize or personalize. I'm going to try to tell the story in its context. And then we're going to look and see how it was used throughout the scriptures. Because this is a major, major warning, the Baal of Peor. Now you're going to notice as we go through, sometimes this word of is dropped. And it'll just say Baal Peor. And so it's kind of confusing. That word Baal means Lord. That's all that it means. So when you hear about somebody worshiping Baal, that's not like one particular god. It's just a god. So you can have all sorts of Baals. They could be all over the place. It'd be like God with a little g, that you are worshiping a god if you're worshiping Baal. This word Peor means opening. And so there's some question as to really what that means. Is this a location? Maybe there's an opening, a crag in between some mountains, or maybe it's a valley. People really aren't sure. So Baal of Peor, this whole idea, really not sure if it's talking about a person or if it's talking about a location. I have a tendency to think it's talking about a location where an entity, where that's where the worship was. And it's all kind of gotten mixed together. So if we lose the word of here in a minute, don't be concerned. It's all in relation to the same thing. So we talked this morning about these historical psalms. So Psalm 106 is one such historical psalm. And it mentions Baal Peor. So put yourself in the place of an Israelite. And you're hearing these songs sung over and over and over. It's amazing how lyrics can stick in our mind from songs that we may not have heard for 40, 50 years. You can hear that song and somehow the lyrics just kind of go into your brain. I've talked to Megan about this. I'm not near smart enough to figure this out. But there's something about music because it crosses your brain. And I don't understand that. And they talk about the different corpus callosum, I think it's called, in the brain that can sit there and go back and forth. One side would hear the music on one side, hears the lyrics and the way that it crisscrosses. That's why music helps you memorize things. And so kids do that all the time. They will make songs of their things they need to learn in school. Well, it's no different. So in Psalm 106, they've been singing this song forever and ever. And they get to this part right here about how they join themselves also to Baal of Peor. And ate sacrifices made to the dead. Thus they provoked him to anger with their deeds, and the plague broke out among them. And then Phinehas stood up and intervened, and the plague was stopped. So that meant something to the Israelites, because that was a very, very important event that happened in their history that, unfortunately, I don't know if we're quite as familiar with as we should be. Here we go. Now I've got a lot of stuff in green. I told you this morning I was just going to talk about this one. But you notice how I put a lot in green because they all go together. Okay? The Midianites, we talked a little bit about them this morning. Sihon and Og, Baal and Peor, these all go together because they all occurred basically during the same time period. So if we're looking at our divisions here, this has been right down here at the bottom of the wilderness. They are right at the end of their time wandering, and they are about to enter into the land of Canaan. So that's where we are during this whole time frame. As if there's going to be some problems before they can enter into the land of Canaan. So here's our background of Baal Peor. As the children of Israel were making their way to get to the land of Canaan, they were getting ready to cross over the Jordan River, but they had to cross through the land of several other countries. One was the Amorites. That was King Sihon. One was Bashan. That's King Og. And then one is Moab. And this was King Balak. Now, there's other countries, but these are three of the major ones that they had to deal with. So here's a nice pretty map for you. They've come out of Egypt in this area. They're coming through here. Remember Edom? Edom is right here. And Moses tried to talk to the Edomites, and the Edomites said, no, you cannot cross through our land. You cannot come around. There's no easement. And so that really got God mad at the Edomites. So that's why they're having to go around Edom. And then they're going to come through. Here's Moab. Here's Ammon. There's Bashan up at the top. So that's where King Sihon and King Og were, by the way. And so those were two famous kings, is what the Bible sometimes calls them. that's Sihon and Og, mentioned several times in the scripture. They, for whatever reason, again, that's a story that they're supposed to know, is how the Israelites overcame Sihon and Og. Right here, this is what we call Saudi Arabia. This is where the Midianites lived. It was in this area right here. So the Midianites butted up to Edom. But the children of Israel were not going to go through Edom. They were not allowed. So they're going up and around, and they're going to come through the land of the Moabites all the way, and then they're going to come back and cross the Red Sea. So that's kind of the idea of what's happening in this situation. Well, the king of Moab was named Balak. So we're about to tell the story, the narrative of Balak and Balaam. And so you might go, oh, I've heard of that, okay. That's the same story as Baal of Peor. It's all intertwined. It's just how you want to name it. So here we go. King Balak is from Moab. And so he's one of those countries that they are about to cross through. Since they couldn't go through Edom, they're going to have to go through Moab. And Balak is not real happy about it because there's a couple million Israelites ready to cross through his land. And he doesn't have the resources, you know. I hate to use this as an example, but similar to our immigrant situation on the southern border, we don't want an open border because we can't take care of all these people that are just streaming across the border. Well, that's kind of how Moab, that's the nation of Moab, kind of felt the same way. They really didn't want the Israelites coming through and destroying all their land. And Balak even says to the elders of Midian, oh, wait a minute. So now, go back one. Moab is up here. Midian is down here. So these two countries are going to come together. Moab and Midian. And remember, the Midianites were the descendants of Abraham. So it was always kind of a touchy situation when Israel had to get involved with Midian. Well, anyway, Moab and the Midianites have come together. And he says, now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field. They don't want the children of Israel coming through their land and destroying everything and taking their resources and taking their food and taking their water. I can understand. I can see why they would be a little bit upset about that. But God's people are going to make their way to the land of Canaan. That's just, that has been foreordained by God. So King Balak's fear really isn't of that much concern. So Balak has an idea. He realizes that he cannot beat them militarily. He can't beat Israel in a war. Israel is too strong. So he's coming up with a second idea. I'm going to try to get them by using a false prophet. And so he comes up and finds this fellow by the name of Balaam. So Balaam is a prophet. And so he gets a hold of Balaam, and I'm not going to read the whole account. If you want to, you're in Numbers chapter 22, if you want to follow semi-along. It's actually across several different chapters, 22 through 25, but I'll pick up on certain anchor verses. But Balak calls out to Balaam and says, here, I've got an idea. He says, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are settling next to me. Therefore, please come at once. Curse this people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I should be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. So he calls on Balaam, his prophet, and says, I want you to come, get over here as quickly as possible, and I want you to curse these Israelites. Put a curse on them so then maybe I can defeat them. The next verse uses kind of a funny word, a diviner's fee. So in other words, Balak was going to pay Balaam to give a bad prophecy. He was going to curse him. Jeff read tonight from Ezekiel 14. Could we have had a better reading? I mean, that's what he's talking about, how prophets would speak as they were supposed to speak. If not, he would deal with them. I heard strains of this Baal Peor throughout Jeff's reading this afternoon. Because prophets are supposed to speak what God says, not what they're paid, not to the highest bidder. But that's what old Balak had an idea of. Hey, I'll give you money, and you come tell these Israelites something negative. Curse them so that they will leave. And so he says, I'll tell you what, give them the night to think about it. And so that night, the word of God comes to Balaam. And Balaam says right here, or God speaks to Balaam in verse 9. He says, God said to Balaam, or verse 12, brethren, you shall not go up with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. There we go. That's all we need to hear. they're not allowed. He's not going to curse them. He said, y'all just, boys just need to go on home. And so they go on back. The messengers go on back to Moab. They find King Balak, and they said, listen, he's not going to come. He said he's not going to curse them. He says, you just need to go on. We're not going to curse them because these people are blessed. And so Balak, I wish I could do a good impersonation. Forgot the guy's name on the movie. I'm going to make you an offer that you can't resist. Totally went blank on the guy's name now. From The Godfather, that's what I'm thinking of. He says, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. So he sends people back to Balaam and says, make him an offer that he's going to say yes to. And so they come back, and Balaam says, listen, Numbers 22 and 18. He says, though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. Now therefore, please, you also stay here tonight that I may know more of what the Lord will say. So far you might be thinking, this Balaam, he's an okay guy, right? He's turned him away once, and now they come back and said, we're going to give you whatever you want. He says, I don't care if you give me a house full of silver and gold. I don't care how much you give me. I'm not going to prophesy different than what the Lord says. But go ahead and stay tonight just in case God changes his mind. And that makes God. God gets a little bit upset with Balaam now because he should have just sent him back. Well, the word of God, the Lord of God, comes to Balaam that night and says, I tell you what, go ahead and go with him. If that's what you want to do, just go ahead and go with him. But only speak what I say to you. So God is not happy now with Balaam because he keeps on stringing these guys along. Just say no and get away. But he keeps on stringing. So the next day he gets up, he's got a couple servants, and he's got the servants there of Moab. And one of the most interesting stories ever in the Bible. This is one of my favorite parts of the Bible happened. They are traveling along, and Balaam is riding on a donkey. And so he's riding down the road, and next thing you know, that donkey stops. I found this little picture I like. This donkey stops. And Balaam doesn't know what's going on. So he hits that donkey and tries to spur him back on. And he can't figure out why that donkey is acting crazy. Well, they go a little bit further, and they're pushing him up kind of against a wall. It kind of gets into a narrow spot. And that donkey goes crazy again, runs up against the wall, pins old Balaam's foot up against the wall, and so he hits him again. They go a third time, and the road was bottlenecked. It said it got to the point where he couldn't turn to the left or the right. He was right there, and that donkey stopped and was not going anymore. And Balaam hits him again, and the most amazing thing happens. Balaam has a conversation with a donkey. Now, I've had a couple conversations with a donkey before, but not quite like this. This is a real donkey. And that donkey said, what are you hitting me for? Why are you hitting me? And then I've had conversations with my cat before, but I've never had the cat answer back. And I don't know if it just didn't register with him or what the deal was, but Balaam just has a conversation with this donkey about why he's not riding, why he won't go. And then all of a sudden, he sees what the donkey saw. And that was the angel of the Lord standing there with the sword. And then all of a sudden, Balaam's world kind of changed. And he's, you know what? You're right. I have done wrong. I am not going to act like this. I am not going to prophesy against these folks. Numbers 22 and 34, Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. But now, if my going displeases you, I will turn back. And the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, but you shall speak only what I tell you. He says, go ahead and finish your trip. Now, he was mad for him going in the first place, but if you want to go that bad, go ahead and go. But he says, you only speak what I tell you to speak. Now see, right now it would be real convenient to moralize this story, right? We could come up with a great moral of the story right here, but I'm not going to do that. So he goes on. He gets up there to Balak, and Balak has this all planned out. I mean, it is a production. He takes him up to a high point on a mount where he can see all of the people. I mean, he can see everybody. And Balaam said, here's what I want. I want 7 altars built. And so he sacrifices a bull and a ram on each altar. So 7 bulls, 7 rams. And then in a big production, he steps up, and I'm sure Balak the king introduces him. Here's this prophet Balaam, and here we go. And he sits back, and he crosses his arms. waiting for Balaam to curse the Israelites. Only one little problem. Numbers 23 and 7. Balak, the king of Moab, has brought me from Aram, from the mountain of the east. Come curse Jacob for me, and come denounce Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? And how shall I denounce whom the Lord has not denounced? That's what he won't do. He won't curse him. And I'm thinking, Balaam, I'm a little bit upset now because he has paid this great money to Marlon Brando. That's the name I was looking for. The offer he couldn't refuse. He has paid this money, or he's planning to pay this money, and he won't do it. He won't refuse. He won't speak against Israel. And so Balak is furious. And he says, watch out, we're going to try something else. So he takes him to another spot. And he moves the venue a little bit where he can't see all the people. He can just see some of the people. So maybe he's thinking, maybe Balaam got nervous. I don't know. So he moves where he can just see part of the people. And Balaam says, sure enough, I want seven altars. He sacrificed seven bulls and seven rams. And he goes up the second time, and he does the exact same thing again. He will not curse the Israelites. Instead, he praises them. And he tells them how they're about to take over the land. I mean, he is blessing the nation of Israel. Balak is upset, so he does it a third time. And this time it says he faced him towards the wilderness, so he couldn't see anybody. And Balaam says, okay, I need seven altars, seven bulls, seven rams. And for the third time, he does the exact same thing again. He blesses the nation of Israel, and he refuses to curse them, even though that's what Balak was expecting. That's what he paid for. That's what he brought him here. After the third one, it says, oh, Balak struck his hands together. I'm guessing that means he just clapped his hands. He was hot. And Balaam decides, he's already cost him 21 altars, 21 rams, and 21 bulls. So he's already cost a lot of money for old Balak. He's not happy. So he gives one more prophecy. One more opportunity. And the fourth prophecy of Balaam, boy, it's wild. So I want you to look, Numbers chapter 24. Numbers chapter 24, he does it again. He says, I'm not going to go against the Israelites. And listen to what he says in verse 17. I see now, but not now. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel, and batter the brow of Moab, and destroy all the sons of Tamar. And Edom shall be a possession. Seir also, his enemy, shall be a possession, while Israel does valiantly. Out of Jacob, one shall have dominion, and destroy the remains of the sea. I don't know. That sure sounds messianic to me. By the time he gets to that fourth prophecy, he's talking about the star out of Jacob and the scepter coming out of Israel, and out of Jacob one which will have dominion. It sure seems to me that he is now leaning on messianic prophecy. I don't think he knows what he's saying, but that's what he said because he gave to the word of the Lord. And so Balak says, that's it. You go your way, I'm going to go my way, and the two separate. And right now, it'd be easy to think, well, the story is over, right? But it's just beginning. Because sometime during this episode, I don't know when, but Balaam offered some advice to Balak that would prove very, very useful. So he said, I can't beat you militarily. He tried to beat him with the false prophet. That didn't work. Balaam sometime offered Balak some advice, a third option of how to bring down the nation of Israel. And it's the oldest trick in the book, loose women. That's what he suggested to him. He said, you need to find some loose Moabite women, and that'll be the downfall. So when I think of this idea, I have two, one that's a biblical and one that's non-biblical. The non-biblical, I think about the old Andy Griffith show, and there was the fun girls. I don't know if you remember then, there was Daphne and Skippy. And somehow Barney Fife got mixed up with these two girls, and every time these two girls came to town, it just brought all sorts of trouble. Then I think about the biblical, I think about Solomon. Solomon had everything, and then he got mixed up at the end of his life with all of these women that he had brought into his kingdom, and he got mixed up with their religion, and it was the downfall of King Solomon. Just these wild women. So we've got to skip ahead a little bit in the story. I'm going to go to Numbers 31 and 16. This is kind of after the fact. Moses is talking now and he is kind of reiterating, he's explaining what happened. He says, look, these women caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord at the incident of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. So I don't know when Balaam counseled Balak and these people, but sometime he counseled. He said, if you want to get the children of Israel, just bring in the women. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So Balak goes his way, Balaam goes back home, but the story of Balaam is really just now getting going. Numbers 25:1-3, now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal at Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel. So this is the incident of Baal at Peor, is when Israelite men mixed with these Moabite women and began to integrate these foreign religions together. That's what Baal Peor is. So it's all tied together with Balaam and Balak and the donkey and that whole story. But this is the incident at Baal Peor. And this was all in the direction of Balaam. He had sold out God's people. Well, God's not happy. Moses said to the judges of Israel, every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal of Peor. He says, kill every one of them. One in particular really draws the irateness of the camp. It says, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So this one guy, we go on to find out his name is Zimri, and the woman's name is Cosby. Only time they're ever mentioned in the Bible, as far as I can tell. These two, I don't know how he presented the woman, but it couldn't have been good. And they come right up to the door of the tabernacle in front of everyone. And Phinehas, the priest, says, no, we can't have that. So remember we read a minute ago about how Phinehas stopped the plague? Here's what happened. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it. He rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her body. So the plague was stopped among the children of Israel. Now I can imagine this is probably not a PG-13 scene right here. I would imagine this would be rated R. That this man and this woman, the child of Israel, and this Moabite woman are found together, and Phinehas takes a javelin and thrusts it through both of them at the same time, killing them, and he stops the plague. However, 24,000 people died because of what happened at Baal Peor and how the nation of Israel mixed with the Moabite gods. All because of the counsel of Balaam, under the direction of Balaam. So we got the whole story now? And that's the story of the incident at Baal. So for a couple minutes now, let me give you a couple verses that talk about this throughout the Bible. We already read Psalm 106. They joined themselves also to Baal the Peor and ate sacrifices made to the dead. So the emphasis here in Psalm is that they were making sacrifices to these dead idols. Instead of the living God, they were making sacrifices to these dead idols, these rocks and trees, things that were not alive. They provoked him to anger with their deeds. Then they had a plague, and Phinehas stood up and intervened, and the plague was stopped. So now you know the whole story. It all comes from Numbers 22 through Numbers 25. Let me tell you, Balaam is not remembered favorably in the Old Testament. So I have several verses here. I didn't use all of these. But there are several verses in the Bible that make mention of Balaam and what a horrible influence he was, and what a horrible prophet he was, and he was a false prophet, and how he talked, and how he brought down the nation of Israel. So we're going to look at a couple of these. What I want you to do is I want you to think about the different layers. As we go through this, think about what the emphasis of each writer is as far as Balaam and Balak and the incident at Baal Peor. So here's Deuteronomy 4:2. It says, you shall not add to the word which I commanded you, nor take away from it. That sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? Keep going. that you may keep the commandments of your Lord your God, which I command you. Your eyes have seen what the Lord did at Baal Peor. He says, don't add to the word or take away from the word. Sounds like I've heard that in Revelation. Don't add or take away, but he gives it in reference to what the Lord did at Baal Peor, because that's what Balaam was trying to do. He was trying to add to the word or take away from the word. He was not planning on saying what God told him to, because he was for money. So there's Deuteronomy 4, verses 2 and 3. Hosea 9 and 10. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first fruits on the fig tree in its first season. But they went to Baal Peor and separated themselves to that shame. They became an abomination like the thing they loved. So what is Hosea's emphasis? What's his paradigm? It's the way that they separated themselves from the true worship to idol worship. From the worship of God to the worship of these Moabite women. Micah 6 and 5. O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, counseled, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him, from Acacia Grove to Gilgal, that you may know the righteousness of the Lord. So what is Micah talking about here? Of how Balak and Balaam counseled and talked back and forth. And Balak, he may not have got all that he wanted, but he did eventually get Balaam to give up the secret, right? Bring out the Moabite women, and that's all that she wanted. So throughout the Old Testament, you're going to read about Balak and Balaam and Baal Peor. Those two events, that's one and the same. It's one major event. And guess what? It doesn't stop when we get to the New Testament. There's several verses here. Several. First is 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter. And we all know about the situation of Corinth. Corinth was a very interesting congregation. Had a lot of problems. Had a lot of problems, but had a lot of problems. So notice what the Apostle Paul says. Now, he's not going to mention Baal Peor or Balaam and Balak by name, but obviously that's in his thought process. He says, nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. So he's referencing the situation of Baal Peor. Now, he says 23,000. Said 24,000, just the way it's rounded, I'm assuming. But that's what he's talking about. Now, he's talking about Corinth. We can't have sexual immorality in our congregation. And that was one of the problems in Corinth. Remember that there was a man who had taken his father's wife. There was some issues of sexual immorality. He says, listen, Corinthians, we cannot commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell. Verse 11, he says, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. We've used that verse before, right? He's talking in reference about Baal Peor. He said, learn from their mistakes. Learn from these people. We can't have in the congregation of Corinth the same thing that happened in Baal Peor. So what's Paul's emphasis? It's the sexual immorality amongst the Lord's people. 2 Peter. Peter and Jude go together. So there's another verse, Jude verse 11, but I just picked Peter. They're basically the same copy, one wrote after the other. But 2 Peter 2 and 15 says, they have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. So with Peter's emphasis, well, it's the way that Balaam was bought. You can't buy truth. You can't buy righteousness. And that's the emphasis here. He's talking, Jude and Peter are both talking about false teachers that have entered into the church, and they're trying to appear to be righteous, but they're not. They're sheeps in wolves' clothing. Flip that. Wolves in sheep's clothing. He says they love the ways of the wages of unrighteousness. They can be bought for a price. So that's his emphasis on that. And then finally, we go to Revelation chapter 2. He says, but I have a few things against you. Because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to be a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality. So, John in the book of Revelation, he picks up on two things. The idols and the sexual immorality, kind of like Paul did in the court. That was his take from the story of Baal Peor and Balaam and Balak. Did you notice the several different levels what this story has to offer. So again, I take you back to this morning. We've got to be careful. Don't try to make a moral to the story, because we might miss what the other, what these authors realize under the inspiration of the Spirit. They pick up on some things that we probably wouldn't pick up on. So we don't want to ever minimize an Old Testament story. We don't want to generalize it and then just try to make points and formulate a lesson around it. We don't want to make it completely personal. We don't want to do that. We have to look at things in a broader context of how does it fit in God's grand scheme of things. And as you can see, that's a big story. Throughout the Scriptures, across our timeline, across the times of the prophets, all the way into the New Testament, this is a big situation. Adding to God's instruction. Pick up on that level. If there was someone that tried to, he was trying to add to what God had taught, or take away, whatever the case. Deuteronomy said, don't add or take away. Selling out the righteous for money. That was kind of the take that we got from Jude and from Peter. Sins of sexual immorality. Well, that's what Paul took it as in 1 Corinthians. Also, we find it in the book of Revelation. Improper idol worship. Okay, that was throughout the Old Testament, and even Revelation brings it up. And I also want you to notice there's one major omission from this lesson. Everybody realize what? Think about the story itself. If we were going to tell the story, and again, if we left it at a children's book level, what would be the most important thing you would tell about that story? There's something amazing happened in that story. Nobody referenced in the Old Testament or the New Testament. And I got to turn to Mike on this because he mentioned it this morning. Nearly every one of those things that were listed on that chart had some type of miracle associated with it. Nearly everything, the crossing of the Red Sea, the plagues, they all had miracles of God. This story had a miracle of God, didn't it? The talking donkey. The talking donkey is by far the most interesting part of this story. It is the most visual, and it's the part that if you ask any little kid, what'd you get from that story? Well, the donkey talked. But not one of these writers referenced it, because that wasn't the main part of the story. Why God chose to do that, I don't know. But there was something miraculous in the story. But that's not the importance of the story of Baal of Peor. It was just one element. Apparently this is what's important. Because that's what the writers of both the Old Testament, the prophets, and the New Testament, that's what they picked up on. Learn from Balaam's mistake. Learn from the mistake at Baal Peor. Don't get caught up in the talking donkey. I think that's a pretty good way to end this lesson. The story of Baal of Peor. So maybe we need to take a look at all of those things that were mentioned in that table to make sure we understand what the writer really trying to give us. So there's my thoughts. Let's see. We never like to close on having a song of invitation. If we can help you now, stand ready for assistance.